Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Alpharetta, Georgia, it's time for Alpharetta Business Radio, spotlighting the area's best businesses and the people who lead them.
It's your host, Chris Dekel, with still technically challenged board over here. However, you know, speaking of technology, this show is all about technology today. We have a group of four people from the Royac Group, and we have Brent Laminack from 3x400, one of the biggest web developers here in the Atlanta area, maybe in the southeast. We'll find out in a minute. But for all of those of you who are seeking IT professionals who want to get top quality people, have them screened, know that they're great before you ever talk to them, from people that know what they're looking at, who've been in the trenches, have done many of the jobs that you're recruiting for, you're going to really enjoy this show. Also, for all of you candidates out there who are looking to change careers or move up in the IT world or who are currently between jobs, I think you're going to be very interested in the Royac Group and what they can do for your career. So I look forward to having everybody from the Royac Group on. And we're going to do them as sort of a roundtable. We'll pitch out a question and we'll see who wants to answer the question. From the Royac Group, we have Tim Brennan, LaTanya Jackson, Cecile Francis, and Todd Tolford?
Tolford, yes.
Tolford, all of whom are recruiters and help companies find exactly who they're looking for the first time. And I can tell you that since I used them in my former company, that you usually hire the person they send. It's very well screened, so you get a little endorsement for free here. And I do accept tips, however. And Brent, welcome. We'll start with you. You're one of the co-founders of 3x400, and you are in Dahlonega, correct?
That's where our headquarters are. We're a virtual company. Everybody works from home, so we don't actually have real estate, but we are centered in North Georgia, in around Dahlonega.
I see. And tell me, how did you get into this business? I know you've been around the Atlanta technology scene for a long time, and I knew you from another group. So, what's your background?
Well, my background is I actually have a degree in physics from Georgia Tech. And, sort of got sucked under by the undertow of the, you know something about computers, back in the late 70s, early 80s, and have been there ever since. I've been managing Unix development on a day-to-day basis since about 1982.
And I know today you're 3x400 is a huge web developer. I mean, how many sites have you guys developed, and who are some of your clients?
Oh gosh, let's see. Dahlonega.org, the Dahlonega Lumpkin County Chamber of Commerce. Dawson.org, the Dawson County Chamber of Commerce. For a while, we were doing the Girl Scouts of Historic Georgia. They got some IT packaged on them, and they had to leave us very regrettably. And no, we did not get paid in thin mints, even though certain people were lobbying for that. So we do a little bit of everything. From our emphasis is small to medium size companies.
I know that you teach in continuing education.
That's right.
Where have you been teaching, and how long have you been doing that?
Well, I started teaching continuing ed at Tech, at Georgia Tech, at about 1990. Dr. Billy Ann Rice hired me there, and if she's listening from her retirement home in Big Canoe, hello, Billy Ann. And then about 6 years ago, I transitioned over to teaching part-time at Emory University. They're continuing education, teach there 4 or 5 days a week, and it's fun. Really, really enjoy teaching continuing ed.
What do you teach?
I'm sort of a utility infielder. I teach introduction to HTML, how to add e-commerce to your site, podcasting, how to shoot a YouTube video that doesn't suck. Things like that.
You also teach, don't you teach web development too?
Yes. A lot of the, you know, just basic web development there. In fact, we have a two-day class in Joomla coming up.
And for all of us who are, you know, total ignoramuses, what is a Joomla?
What is a Joomla? To take a step back, the way we did websites 10 years ago is you had a web developer, usually an outside resource, who had maybe a copy of Go Live or Dreamweaver or, you know, back in those days, some of the old Microsoft front page, for instance. And you'd sort of tell them what you wanted, and they would fire up their web design program and do you a website. And it sort of sat out there, and it was changed about as often as your Yellow Pages ad, back when there were Yellow Pages ads. Remember those? And then if you had changes you made to your website, like you're a restaurant and all of a sudden you're closed on Mondays, decide to close on Mondays, you dash off an email to your web designer and say, please say that we're closed on Mondays. And if you were lucky, in a couple of weeks, they got around to it, and then they updated your website and sent you a bill for it. Well, those days are gone. Those days are gone. People are now manage their own websites.
What's made that possible?
Well, what's made that possible is a rise of a lot of open source that is publicly, freely available, what we call content management systems, programs that allow you to update and manage your own website. The three leading free ones are WordPress, Joomla, and Drupal, and we're probably 3x400 is probably the largest Joomla shop here in Georgia. And you can go to, you know, anybody who wants to can go to joomla.org and download it for free and build your own website.
So what's the difference between a system like a Joomla and, you know, the hard-coded HTML or Dreamweaver kind of site?
Well, to the end user, they look exactly the same. I mean, you know, it both says, has your about us, your hours of operation, you know, pictures of smiling faces of your team, things like that. The big difference is that in a dynamic website, content management website like Joomla or WordPress or Drupal, the owner of the website, the small business owner, can go in to an administrative interface and edit the stories themselves. If you can use Microsoft Word, you can use one of these systems. You know, it's very, very similar. So you don't have to pay that webmaster the $50 to update your site and wait 2 weeks. You know, you think of something, you can log on immediately, update it, and you're live.
That's great. You know, what are the other advantages of a content management system?
Well, the other advantages of CMS's content management systems is you can add interaction with your audience. With static HTML sites, it's basically a brochure. You know, just sits out there on the web and looks pretty. With these content management systems, you can do additional functionality like have a forum where people can log on and discuss things, or have make comments to your articles, or have slideshows. You know, maybe you can take pictures and upload them to Flickr or Picasa or something like that, which a lot of cameras do by default these days. You can display those slideshows on your website and change the content and interact with your audience in a much more dynamic way. There are even little plugins that will turn your site into sort of a mini Facebook, you know, where people can post photos or videos or, you know, write on your wall or things like that. We have one customer, for instance, who has a horse farm out east of Atlanta, and they have this sort of mini social network there for people to schedule trail rides with each other, because apparently it's a lot more fun to ride with somebody.
Yeah. You know? You mentioned a plug-in. What exactly is a plug-in, and how do you get them, and what's that? You know, what do they do, and how many of them are there, and, you know, what do they cost?
All right, a plug-in is a little bit of software that adds functionality to your website, such as some of I mentioned are a slideshow. You know, add a slideshow or add a discussion forum or, let's see, add a sign up for our mailing list functionality. All of these open source content management systems have thousands and thousands of plugins available. I think Joomla currently has over 10,000 of them available. Most of them are free. A real expensive one might cost $49 or something like that. Most are very, very reasonably priced.
What would it cost you to do that if you had to code it yourself?
Oh, my gosh. You don't even want to start. It would take you know, 6 to 9 months full-time of a full-time programmer just to get it off the ground for some of these larger plugins.
Wow. And you could just, you know, download it and, you know, very quickly have that functionality for $49 if it's an expensive one.
Right. And the good thing about it is there are alternatives available, like, a typical plugin would be a calendar. All right. Show us a list of upcoming guest on Business Radio X, you know. Some of our clients, we put a calendar on, and they say, you know, I really don't like that calendar. It doesn't do exactly what I want. Well, fine, we'll go out and download you another one for free and put it on, see if you like that one better. And they say, oh, yeah, I like that one better. Whereas if you're designing your own from scratch, you can't afford to throw it away after you've designed it.
So that is if it works when you're done.
If it works when you're done. So, it's a very, very dynamic community out there of developers who contribute back to the community.
So how does this change in, you know, how you acquire functionality for your website change the role of a web developer?
Well, the web developer is no longer strictly the graphic person or the content master writing copy. We're more now of a system integrator. We're more of a strategy consultant and more of an educator, you know. Because when we bring up the website, we train the client how to do their updates, and probably 80 to 90% of our clients do 80 to 90% of their updates themselves. They never have to call us. So ours becomes more of a consultative role. Well, let's see. Let's take a look at where your website visitors are coming from. What pages are they looking at? Are they signing up for your mailing list? Are they buying your T-shirts or whatever? And let's work together to figure out how to further your business goals.
And that takes a lot of experience well beyond technology. That's business. That's business sense.
That's business sense. And, I've got... let's see. I've got some. I've got probably about 50% of the gray hairs in the room at the moment. So I've been around the block a few times here.
What do you bring to the table as 3x400 that distinguishes you, from the business perspective as well as from the technology perspective?
Well, like I said, I've been around the Atlanta technology arena for 30 plus years, been CTO of startups, so I feel the pain. My business partner, Beth Snyder, was, I think, the first female MCSE on the East Coast.
And an MCSE for those who are not into the nomenclature.
Microsoft Certified System Engineer.
Okay.
Way back. She worked for ING and various other web design companies. So, and she has started businesses herself. Let's see, she ran a tabloid-sized magazine called 400 Edition that was free monthly, distributed thousands of copies every month. We've each been in startups, each built businesses, and know what it takes to make business happen.
Yeah. We hear a lot about SEO, search engine optimization. What do you do with that, and how does this play into, you know, open source? How is all this stuff connected, and what's it mean to a business?
What it means to a business is Well, there's an analogy here. People were doing search optimization before Google. Remember, again, back in the Yellow Pages days, remember trying to find a plumber in the Yellow Pages? Remember the first one listed was, what, AAA Aachen Plumbing? All right. Well, that was not search engine optimization. That was search optimization. You want to be the first person, the first plumber that people found on the page. Well, today, the equivalent of Yellow Pages is Google or Bing or the search engines, and the goal is still the same. You want to be the first one listed there on the page. And there's a lot that goes into that, using the right words that are on the page. Good, clean web pages so that Google can find you. And it's what we call on-page search engine optimization. Then there's also that's harder to do, off-page search engine optimization, which is how the rest of the internet is talking about you, all right? And that's probably the more important of the two phases, the hardest to manage and probably the longer-term strategy. But yeah, we help
all
with
those, all
those
those people that are promising for $129 to make you come up on page one of Google.
Yeah. We see various waves of charlatans out there. That was, let's see, that was about 3 to 5 years ago. There was a wave of search engine optimization charlatans. And then about 2 to 3 years ago, there was a wave of social media charlatans out there. The current wave of charlatans is mobile optimization charlatans to make you show up on people's cell phones and things like that. And we've been in business long enough. We've seen them come. We've seen them go. But, you know, our clients who stick with us are still in business, and so are we.
Yeah. So if somebody, you know, do you actually do a search engine optimization
in
3x400 for
yes,
your clients?
Yes, we do. But we do not promise, you know, anybody who says, I will guarantee you'll be number one search result for your keywords is lying. All right. I'm sorry, because they aren't Google. They don't run Google, you know. We tell our clients that we will play by Google's rules. We will do the things that are necessary. But to a degree, search engine optimization is a Red Queen's race. Do you know that phrase? It's from Alice in the Looking Glass. Alice is talking to the Red Queen, and all of a sudden the Red Queen grabs her by the hand and says, "Run!" And Alice starts to run, and she's running as hard as she can, and the wind's blowing in her face, and her hair's flapping, and they're running as hard as they can. And Alice is looking around, and they're still under the same tree. They haven't moved, and they're running and running and running, and finally they're about to collapse, and the Red Queen says, "Stop." And finally Alice catches her breath and says, "You know, in my country, if we ran that hard and that long, we would have gotten somewhere." And the Red Queen says, "Well, you come from a slow sort of country. Here, you got to run as hard and as fast as you can just to stay in the same place." Okay, that's search engine optimization. You got to run as hard and as fast as you can to stay in the same place. Why? Because all those people on page two of Google search results, they're running harder and faster than you are to try and get on page
one. If you're number two, you try harder.
That's right, you know?
Yeah.
There's only so many slots on that first page of Google. But, so we'll grab you by the hand, and we'll run as hard and fast as we can. That's our guarantee.
Right. Okay, Brent, if people want to get up with you in 3x400, how do they contact you?
I'm just Brent, B-R-E-N-T, at 3by400.com. That's number 3by400. We always get asked about the name. It's because there were three founders and we live near the end of 400. Okay, so we're 3by400.com. Real easy to remember. And our website is 3by400.com.
Well, that's complicated. Well, thank you, Brent. Can you stay in the station for our other guests?
Absolutely.
Great. Well, I'd like to go over to the Royac Group now, and a great group of recruiters. And I'd like to start with Tim, and I'd like to ask you, about your recruiting process. And what, you know, I know the Royac Group personally. They have recruited people for me in the past. But what makes your process so uniquely effective?
Well, thank you for the introduction, And I'm glad that you know us very well, and you probably know that we do things differently. We have a 19-step process that we follow, and the essence of that process is to capture everything we can from the minute we start interacting with a candidate about them, about the opportunity, about the client, everything that we can bring together to make the vetting of the candidate a good process, getting them in our database, making sure that we have all of their information, doing the best job we can of knowing what they're looking for, what they've done, the ideal situation, the ideal company, et cetera, so that it really heightens the chances of us making a placement, because it's really all about putting the right candidate in front of the right client at the right time for the right reasons. The better job we do of that, the better job we do of making placements. Our candidates appreciate it. Our clients appreciate it. It's just it's a phenomenal process that we follow. We're diligent about it. We maintain our database regularly, daily. Anytime there's an update, it gets in there. It's just a fantastic process.
And how is the Royac Group's process and what you deliver for customers and for the people you're recruiting? How does that differ from your competition?
We don't have any competition at the end of the day, as far as I'm concerned. And I mean that sincerely. And I've been in this industry for a long time. When I say industry, I mean IT. We are a small, mighty company with a large reach. The essence of our recruiting process and our mantra is high touch, high tech, hands on, with integrity in information technology. And we live, sleep, eat, and breathe that on a daily basis. If we're going to work with a candidate locally, they must come into our office and meet with us. It doesn't matter if they're a help desk developer or a CXO. And there's a reason for that. You can learn things about a resume by reading it. You can learn a little more by talking to the candidate about their resume, but you can learn so much more by talking to them in person, by meeting them. We don't market resumes, we market people. And that's really what having people in our office is all about. We're not going to place 100% of the people that come in our office, but we're going to remember 100% of the people that come in our office. And by using our database, which is the first place we look when we have an opening, we're finding people we know when we're doing a search. It's not like going to Monster and dealing with people we don't know. We know the people in our database. We know what they're looking for. We know what they've done. And it's just a phenomenal process. It's fun to do a search in your database and find six people who you've sat across the desk from. You know what they look like. You know what they're looking for. You know them as an individual. And it's kind of like four dimensions to what we do. It's just the candidates appreciate it, and our customers really appreciate it.
Yeah, I like your phrase that you're placing people, not resumes. Yeah, what's the downside of looking on Monster and Career Builder and places like that if you're looking for somebody in IT?
There's a couple. Every search that we do is not, in some cases, we're not the only company looking for people. So everybody has the same access to those boards, and all those candidates that are in play for anybody. So it's not, we don't have any special privileges by going to Monster or Dice or any of those places. The best place is really our own database. It's something that we know and we use. Anybody want to add into that?
Yes, this is LaTanya. Yes, we definitely don't want to rely heavily on the conventional methods, using the databases that everyone else is using. Again, as Tim was saying, we want to make sure we're integrating our own common grounds, if you will, the people that we have developed those relationships with. Beyond that, though, we're using networking groups. We're going far beyond just the status quo when it comes to our reach. We also like to pride ourselves on the fact that we build a pipeline of referrals. We rely heavily on those that we have met to tell us who else they know. And I think using those different methods set us apart from the competition. And that really puts our clients' perspective, whereas they come back to us repetitively asking us to do exclusive searches, confidential searches, because they know that our pool of talent is different and separate from those that are out there.
It's that social networking thing working for you.
Indeed.
Yeah. If I could ask another question, what areas and what kind of jobs and technology skills are in demand right now? I'm not sure who this is for, but I'm sure there's one of you that knows exactly.
No, I'll take that. Healthcare is very hot. It's going to stay hot. Healthcare technology for the next couple of years is probably going to lead the industry. Mobility is very hot. Logistics, finance, areas like that are very hot right now.
And those are, you know, industries. How about technology?
There's always need for .NET developers. We're seeing a lot of needs for architects, product managers, project and product managers, actually.
Where's the biggest challenge in IT from, you know, working with, you know, finding people that are technologically able to do the job? Where are the other gaps? You know, where do you find that the people that have the technology skills lack other skills?
The biggest challenge, in my opinion, isn't finding the people. It's retaining them. Well, there is today a little bit of a challenge because unemployment in IT is very, very low. And what that means is there aren't a lot of people out there. It's not like in 1994. So there aren't a lot of people out there. The people that are out there, if they're good, their phone is ringing constantly. So they're being besieged with calls from other recruiting organizations and from employers. And what that means is when you have a candidate in hand, you have to work very diligently and manage them. You have to understand what else is going on in their world, how much time you have to work with them before they may fall off the table. You also have to manage your client and try and get them to hasten the process of interviewing and vetting candidates and hiring candidates, because the oldest saying in this industry is the time is the enemy. You're always in danger of losing a phenomenal candidate and losing a client candidate because of time. So you really, and that's really where our process helps us manage both our clients and our candidates.
You've got a comment, Cecile.
Yes, I'd like to add to that. Beyond just the technical skills, we do look for very strong communication skills. We're in a world where we have blended teams. You may have part of the team being offshore, and we want to make sure that that new candidate can fit into meet those business challenges. So we want to make sure that they're well aware of flexibility, travel schedule, being able to put everything on the table that will help them be a true asset to the client. Team building is another area that's very important. When a candidate is coming on board, you want to make sure that they're there for the long run. This is going to be their new career home, so to speak. So we want to understand that company, everything that fits their landscape, and make sure that the new candidate is counseled what it would be expected of them in, you know, short order, so to speak. So I think flexibility, blending into the team, being able to work with an offshore team or a distributed team would be very important as well. So we want them to be aware that it's not just your talent and your technical skills, but being a well-rounded individual to match that perfect client. And therefore, that makes for a win-win. Perfect client and a perfect company, so to speak.
You said something about offshoring. Obviously, people are outsourcing some of their work. Do you do any outsourcing or outplacement? Or I'm not sure we're clear on the terms here, but I'm sure somebody here can clarify both of those for us.
Hi, Chris. This is Todd. We've placed people in other countries before, but as far as offshoring the projects that our client gives to us, we do provide solution work, so project work, project-based, as well as staff augmentation. So the staff augmentation would be coming to us and saying, okay, I need two software developers and one tester, one project manager. So that's staff augmentation. And then we'll go in and also provide a whole solution to a client, basically bringing them a team. But as far as offshoring the work that's being done, that isn't our forte. I see it going on. I'm seeing more and more work. I guess in the last probably 5 to 7 years, offshoring being a little bit diminished, because I think a lot of the larger clients aren't getting maybe what was promised at times, just as an overall viewpoint of what I see in regards to offshoring.
That's interesting. So, you know, you're seeing some of that offshore work coming back onshore.
I am. And, you know, it goes to the point where a similar thing would be when you had a breakdown in your computer and you used to call the 1-800 support line, and generally you weren't calling someone in the United States. I'm seeing less and less of that as far as an indicator, just where customers are deciding as far as quality. I think the price was always there as far as being cheaper, but was the quality. And I think that that's a lot of what's happening with offshoring as far as coming back onshore, if that makes sense, yes.
Yeah. Are those people permanent hires, or are they augmented staff under contract? What's the market looking for now? Permanent hire, or are they looking for temporary employees?
That's a good question, and we've weathered a few recessions, as you know, we're coming through one or a few years ago. And on that note, I'd say about 2 years ago in Atlanta, things really started picking up with IT. Maybe not manufacturing, that seems to have come behind or is still trying to be where it was before. But right now, and we've seen this before, as far as permanent hires typically happening post-recession in the immediate terms. In other words, now we're dealing with first quarter. People typically are going to bring in their permanent employees and try to fill those slots. We're seeing more permanent positions than contract. We kind of expect the trend to continue as it has in the past, where you're going to look at more contractors being sought the second quarter. And, you know, the second and third quarter in our business, I always say our business goes with the weather. It really doesn't. You know, I said when it's warm, it's good for us. But it's really because it's the second and third quarter tend to be the hottest.
I see. Well, if we could change focus now, I'd like to talk to you about the candidate side of recruiting and what a candidate can expect if they work with you. Is this an event, or is this a relationship? And how do you work with a candidate? What sets you apart for what you do for a candidate? Or someone who is in between jobs and said, hey, you know, or I'm in one, you know, I mean, I'm getting paid, but I can't stand the company. What do you do? How do you help them? How do you work with them?
Chris, it's Tim here. Number one, we work a lot with candidates in transition. And in many cases, we don't have a job for them that we're working on with a customer. But we will bring them into our office, and we'll get to know them. We'll get to know their history and what they're looking for. We'll kind of rein in them in terms of salary. We'll find out if they want to work contract or perm, or they'll work either. And again, we get to know them as a person. And it's the same exact process that we follow when we're bringing candidates in who are actually looking for specific jobs, and they've responded to an ad, or we have found them, and we're discussing that particular situation. We'll work with them, get to know them as best we can, and we do a lot of proactively marketing candidates. And what I mean by that is, if we discover in that process of meeting people that they might be a very good candidate for a company that we've worked with, in a lot of cases where we know hiring managers, we will proactively market that person, and we'll simply put them in front of the hiring manager and say, this is a person this is the type of person you have tended to hire in the past. Is there any interest? You would be amazed how often that happens. The trick is always to get the candidate in front of a client and to have it be a love-in. They love each other.
How do you help them have, you know, this love fest?
By understanding as much as we can about the company and its culture and about the candidate and the type of culture that they would be the most successful in. Skill sets are skill sets, but culture can make a huge difference. And so when we find ourselves in that situation with the right candidate and the right company, companies will do amazing things. They will create positions. If they can't create positions, they'll make sure that the next hire, when a position like that becomes open, is that person. And it works for us very well, and I think the reason it works is that we do go to great lengths to know both our candidates and our people. And it's a lot of time. It's a lot of investment that we put in to bring folks into the office. It takes time. It takes time away from us as recruiters. We could be recruiting, but getting to know our people is really the cornerstone of our growth and our success.
I see. When you're working with a candidate, how do you help them prepare for that interview? What do you give them insights into their, here are the things that you really need to work on, and here's some suggestions for doing that. How do you help a candidate? They've got great technical skills, but if you can't talk to them, you'll never know it.
This is Cecile. Well, we really want to make sure that they're very well prepared. So we start by having them to research the company. Again, this is going to be your career home. You want to understand the company, their business challenges, and then match that to what you bring to the table. Look at that common ground as far as challenges that you have experienced in the past, projects that you've worked on, where you can truly be an asset from day one. That is really very important. Having them to do that and then go a little bit beyond that. Look at the hiring manager and the team. You know, look at the common ground, understand their background as well, because you want to have that conversation. So we have them to, beyond the normal, you know, get to that interview on time and make sure you have that firm handshake. We want them to really consider themselves almost as part of the team or, you know, on the onset. And I think that allows them to transition. Be sure to answer every question. At the end of that interview, you want to make sure that every stone has been turned and they are well known by the hiring manager as well. And if that question is not well understood, take the time to restate the question. And also at the very end of the interview, it's not a bad idea to just say to them, you know, you've learned a lot about me. Is there anything else that you need to understand about my background that will help me be an asset to your company? That way, you know, they can really close the door and take the relationship one step further. The goal here is to get beyond that initial phone screen and to be able to get that job and get started. Show some enthusiasm as well. I mean, very often some people can go through that process of the interview and be a little nervous. We want them to have a conversation, and therefore understanding a little bit more about the company allows them to ask questions as the interview progresses.
I see. In terms of working with your candidate, you've done a great job getting prepared for the interview. What do you do with the company after the interview? Do you call them up proactively? Do they call you up? And what do you find out from that? And how does that help a candidate?
This is LaTanya. Yes, we definitely believe in follow-up at the Roryek Group. It's critical. We owe both sides feedback. We want to make sure that we, again, bring that relationship together. And the best way to bring the relationship together is to make sure we're constantly communicating with the company, the client, as well as the candidate. So we're definitely, as soon as that interview is over, we're closing that gap. We're following up with the company with what we understand from the from the candidate that the interview process was. You know, we debrief, if you will, speak with the candidate and say, tell us about your conversation. Tell us about your meeting. And based on the feedback that they share with us, we go to the client and we more or less reiterate saying, we understand when you were speaking with ABC candidate that, you know, the outcome was, you know, what have you. And we want to make sure, again, we're focusing on the client's needs. We're showing them how this person is going to be meeting their needs, if you will, and what's in it for them. So again, so they can understand why the Roryek Group has sent this person to them, why it is the best match. And again, we're bringing that relationship together, tying those loose ends. And another thing that we do at the Roryek Group too, proactively, part of that 19-step recruiting process that Tim was speaking about, part of that process is we're ahead of the game with reference checks. We're ahead of the game with taking care of all those background checks and all those things that the client would have to do. And more or less what we're saying to that client is this person is ready to be hired. So I think definitely we're going to the client immediately. We're not passively sitting back waiting to hear from the client, but we're taking that step to get that information. So again, we can have the knowledge, we can share it with the candidate, and if we're off step, we can make sure we rearrange and we're back on track.
I see. I see a hand. Is that a hand up down there, Cecile?
Yes. I wanted to add to that as well. We also want to keep the candidate focused. It's a situation where we know that this candidate would be great for the client. So, again, time kills deals. We want to make sure that the client, you know, they don't sleep on it because it's a very competitive market. And if we've taken that time to select this wonderful candidate for you, we want you to have the benefit of bringing that person on board. So that great feedback initially is very, very important for us to be able to pass that information on to the candidate and keep them focused on this wonderful opportunity.
Once you've finished and placed a candidate, what do you stay in touch with them? Do you help them with their career? Do you provide advice along the way?
Absolutely. Not every situation is going to work out. And we tell candidates this all the time. Look, the reason you're here is we want to get to know you as a person. So that if this doesn't work out, we can keep you front and center. When the next opportunity comes up that does match that skill set, we're ready for it. We know you. We don't have to have you come back into the office again. We already know everything we need to know about you. Obviously, we're going to call them and make sure they know about the opportunity and the company and it's a match and they want to go ahead and be submitted for it. But they're packaged and they're ready to go. I wanted to just comment on the earlier conversation, too. One important thing about prepping a candidate, and we go to great lengths to do that, and we all get involved, not just the recruiters, because we're really trying to tee it up to be a success. Mm-hmm. But one of the most important things about prepping that candidate, and it goes to the issue of knowing our customers, there's always landmines out there that can get asked in that initial phone screen, which is so critical. And if those things exist, we try to tell the candidate, look, if this issue comes up, here's how to answer it. Do not step on that landmine because it will mean you'll never get any further in the process. On the back end, when we're debriefing with a candidate, we have a very formal process that we use. We record all this information and memorialize it. And one of the things that we do, if this candidate does not work or if there are several in process, what kind of questions did the customer ask you during that interview? And we're capturing those and helping to tee up the next candidate. By the way, here are some of the questions they've asked. Here are some important things. So it's all about understanding what's happening and the information that we can gather during the process.
I'd love to hear some of the best questions that employers have asked, as well as some of the worst, and I'd love a couple of examples of landmines.
Well, one landmine, for instance, we have a customer who does not like to hire people that come from a contracting background, because they're afraid the next time someone calls up with a $125 an hour gig, they're going to be gone. And they've gone to the trouble to bring them on as a permanent employee. So that customer may ask, do you prefer contract or permanent work? The wrong answer is either. I prefer permanent work. That's a landmine. And so the more you know about potential landmines, the better off you can prepare your candidate.
Yeah, which is a great point, that you really need to understand your company and what they look for. And I mean, you know, it's interesting. We're talking a lot here about technology, but this is really high-touch people business.
It absolutely. The technology is it's adjunct to everything else we do.
You don't hire coders, you know, you hire people that come with all the things that people always come with, skill sets, you know, prejudices, peccadillos, and just plain, you know, well, okay, you know, perhaps this one should be wearing a jacket with straps on the sleeves, but you know, it's a really a high touch business. Is that why you got into the business in the first place?
I think everyone in this room is first and foremost a people person. And it's speaking for everyone else. It's the highlight of my job, is meeting people. I love it. I think we all do. And I think, you know, we were built on that. That's how we've been so successful over these past 10 years. As Todd said, we've weathered the economic crises and maintained our growth. And it's because of the way we operate.
And as a result of all of these things that you've done over the years, I mean, you've been through the up and down of the business cycles. What companies have you worked with? And what makes a great company for the Royat Group?
A great customer really would be one who can articulate their needs, not just the technical needs, but also the soft skills coming to the table, and also provide some information upfront on the culture that would be important to them. Again, it's a people business, and so, you know, you can have various coders, but we want to find the one that's uniquely fit. You know, fitted to that particular company. So sharing that information with us up front is really, really important. Having a very short and thorough process, have us understand, okay, how do you want to go about this interview process? Maybe a phone screen followed by a face-to-face. That way we can prep the candidates ahead of time. If they're considering other opportunities, you know, you want to make sure that they're very well informed beyond, you know, the client and what they bring to the table, but also to have an understanding what that process would look like. Taking one step further is just looking at top-notch results. It is great as we go through the process to have that continuous feedback. we can have a follow-up, as we say, we do have that follow-up debrief with the candidate, but likewise, we want to have that follow-up with the company. You know, what have you heard so far? What have you seen from the candidates that we've put on the table? Are there other issues that come to mind? And that helps us to really develop the process as we move along. That makes for a wonderful customer.
Can you give us the names of some of the companies that you've helped recruit great candidates for? Or is that, you know, one of these buried corporate secrets that, you know, you can tell us, but they'd kill you when you get back?
We do work across industries, okay. So we're not industry specific, and we have a pretty formidable strength across those industries. And we deal a lot with healthcare clients. We're working locally with a company called Connecture. They are expecting to grow exponentially over the next few years, and we're looking for project managers for them. In the financial services space, we work a lot with a company called Criff Lending Solutions. A lot of people have never even heard of them, but they are an international presence in the financial services marketplace with software solutions for banks, credit unions, et cetera. Any other companies anybody wants to talk about?
Well, we do cover solution partners as well. So, you know, we're able to come in and help them, tag team with them to deliver a solution. So we're very flexible, direct placements, contracts, and just outright being able to respond to a statement of work. That way we can really fit the needs.
Yeah, you're able to meet the need of the client rather than trying to shoehorn your solution into what they need.
That's correct.
A remarkably effective process. I thank you for being on. Now, before we go, if people want to get in touch with the Royac Group, how should they do that?
You actually can reach us at 770-772-5111. That's our local number in Atlanta. And our website is the Royac Group. It's all one word. And Royac is spelled R-O-Y-A-K. So theroyacgroup.com is our website, and that would be the best way to reach us.
Okay. Well, this has been a great show. I've learned a lot about web development and CMSs and plugins. I've also learned even more about a company I thought I knew well, but you go way beyond some of the things I even knew you did. So thank you for coming on. Thank you for spending your time with us on a holiday, and I know our guests will get a lot out of this. Brent?
Thank you, Chris.
My pleasure.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Thank you.